Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects we all struggle with in this conversation with a reluctant therapist. Happy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Happy Tuesday, Hank.
What's happening?
Well, check out my new pants.
I would call those, it's only Tuesday, but I would call those Friday fun pants.
They are totally Friday fun pants, yeah. But I was feeling it today when I was getting dressed to come into work. Because you know the days that you don't really get dressed until 2 o'clock?
I call those Saturdays.
And so I went into my closet and was like, what outfit is going to bring me to the level of energy I need for today's show? And these red, lattice-y looking pants spoke to me. So that's where I am. If you could see me now, that would say everything you needed to know about where I'm at today.
Okay.
Would that be fair?
That's fair, and I feel honored that I'm the only one that can see you at this point.
Honored or relieved, maybe, would be the right response. And the other thing, Hank, remember last week I assigned homework, which is to read Ishmael by Daniel Quinn. Have you gotten started?
I haven't started it yet. My dog got a copy of the book and
took a bite.
Yeah, took a bite out of it.
So. All right. Well, you can download it anytime because remember I flew to Houston to talk to Daniel Quinn, and I'm bringing back all of this interview and putting it together for a show coming up in a few weeks. So you need to read Ishmael and then Beyond Civilization. And if you're really into his writing, read The Story of Bee. So that's the homework. That's for everyone. Get that book read because it'll make it a lot more fun to do the show and share the interviews if people have some experience with the book and kind of get where I was going with wanting to fly out there and see him. And also, it kind of leans into where we're going to today's conversation because I was thinking about, you know, how I'd set these goals for the last year to interview these authors and to drive across the country and kind of do these things to push myself, to challenge myself in new ways and kind of expand my horizons. And I was feeling a little blue. I think I said it last week. I was feeling a little heavy of heart and kind of like, why am I feeling blue? Things are good. School is good. My life is good. You know, knock on wood that's nearby. Everyone's in a good spot. I was feeling a little blue. And I realized that I'd kind of checked off this pretty huge goal that I'd set for myself. Like I'd achieved this thing, my Mount Everest, you know, that I'd been thinking about for the last couple of years. And there's this kind of natural dip, you know, emotionally that we go through, anyone goes through when they've achieved something that huge in their lives. And then you kind of look out and think, oh, you know, is that all there is? Because we also have this idea that when we achieve that amazing goal or reach that pinnacle or get to that place we dreamed of, that it's going to sustain us, that we'll now be full, right? We'll feel that happiness forever and we'll just carry on. But the truth is, as human beings, we are incredibly adaptable. And there's there's this thing called hedonistic adaptation, which means that no matter how great things are, no matter how fabulous they are, we adapt to them and they become kind of old school or passe. And then we're looking for the new thing, the new thrill. So I'm kind of in that place where I'm between accomplishments in my life. How about you? I mean, what's the latest accomplishment for you or goal or achievement?
Well, this goes back a ways. The thing I remember working hardest at and looking with the most anticipation was getting my driver's license when I was 16.
Okay, that was a long time ago.
40 years, so I should probably move ahead. No, after that, the thing I really wanted to do was get a full-time job in broadcasting because it was something I fell in love with in college, and that's been 28 years. So those are two really, really, really big ones. And more recently, I would say it's smaller things. Well, since then, I've gotten married, and that was a biggie.
But that wasn't last year.
No, that was 17 years ago.
Okay, we're moving closer.
If we're talking about modern day, it would be smaller things like going on a nice trip or like your trip across country. I would love to do that. And at this point, I'm not able to find the time, but that's on my near horizon. Maybe take a shorter trip, maybe take a $4 or $5 day vacation, kind of closer to home, but still, those are small goals. But that's where I'm at now. And I took a real nice vacation about a year ago, and when that was over, there's the sense of okay, now what? Now,
yeah.
I looked forward to it for so long, and now that's done. What's next on the horizon? And right now, I don't have anything specific.
Yeah, that dip is natural
yeah.
to go through. And I'm going to push you because I'm going to push everyone today. So the goals of trips and vacations still are kind of along that hedonistic or kind of the happiness in the moment to moment. But I think what I'm looking at, and it goes back to last week's show where we were talking about positive psychology and Martin Seligman's work in developing the theory of well-being. And this theory of well-being includes accomplishment as one of the cornerstones of maintaining our mental health. That a lot of us, you know, can think, well, I'll think good thoughts, or, you know, I'll try to exercise, or I'll do these things so that I'll keep my mental health. But he's saying, you know, no, accomplishments, having goals or achievements, something that's more than just your annual vacation, but actually that stretches us in our intellect or our physicality in ways that are really important in maintaining that sense of well-being. And I wonder if for a lot of people, this kind of low-level ho-hum or low-level kind of down sense is because at some point in our lives, we stop thinking that there are still things we can accomplish or learn or grow to. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm kind of at a spot right now of stasis where it's just
Good word.
A day-to-day thing. But yeah, I strive for something like what you're talking about.
Well, that's why we have each other.
Yeah.
And a great use of the word stasis, because one of the reasons that people kind of get stuck or settled in this state is because this level of homeostasis is very comfortable. Our brains like it, our bodies like it, our world likes it. And whenever we change anything for any reason, even if it's for a great reason, even if it's a healthy change, our psyche freaks out a little bit and tries to push us back to that original sense of stasis. And so it is challenging to even set these goals and move forward to these accomplishments and achievements, because we're kind of fighting against our own psyche, right? Our own brain chemistry that's preventing us from bursting through and changing our homeostasis, even if it's for the better. So that's where we're going today. Is we're going to talk about achievements and goals. What are the things that you have set forth to do in your life and that you've actually achieved? Or are you in the process of achieving something or trying to, you know, get to another level of accomplishment or mastery in something? And the other part is sharing it, actually telling people about these accomplishments, about these goals, about these things that we've done in our life that we're so proud of. It's really a challenge. A lot of people don't ever share their great accomplishments because, well, when we have a brag-phobic culture, right? It's considered a faux pas or annoying to brag about things that we have done. But I want to argue today that there's a difference between bragging and sharing something that has been meaningful to you. And that when we share things that have been meaningful or things that we've learned or ways that we've grown or things that we've overcome, that they're actually ways that we connect with other people in deep, more meaningful ways. That when we share kind of these things that we've overcome or struggled with to achieve, we're actually building our relationships and our connections. And there's a difference between, again, sharing an accomplishment and bragging about something we've done. And so, you know, I want to open up the lines today and give you an opportunity to call in and share something that you're proud of, something that you've done, that you've accomplished, that once you say it out loud, even makes it more real for you. Because what we know in the world of psychotherapy is that part of the healing and part of the sustaining of our mental health is being able to have someone witness and hear our story. That when we share our story with someone, it makes it more real for us. It gives it more of a base inside of our psyche. And it's wonderful to kind of hold things and know that we accomplish them, write them in our journal. But when we speak them out loud, it makes them real. And so today, that's going to be my goal, is to encourage you to call in and say out loud those things that you're proud of, something that you never thought you would be able to do or worked for years to get to or set a goal to do and got to, and say it out loud and get some praise, get some positive feedback. I want to help to work on your state of well-being and how you're feeling today and how you can own that sense of achievement. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and we get together every Tuesday afternoon to have these conversations to kind of go where my mind is wandering. And this week, it's wandering into the world of positive psychology and the theory of well-being. Again, where we kind of left off last week, and to continue on from there. And you can be part of our conversation by calling 805-781-3875. You can find me on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. I post shows every week. If you like the page, you'll get updates. You can always comment there or send me a message through Facebook, or you can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. And since the summer, I haven't been great keeping up with it, but you can follow us on our Instagram, @thereluctanttherapist. Try to post pictures of things that are happening or things that are new. And I think, oh, and if you'd like to listen to previous shows, you can go to kcbx.org under the News Talk tab. All of our shows are listed there, A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And if you podcast, you can download our shows on your devices by going to iTunes and searching A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist and hit subscribe, and they will come right to you every week, and you can listen at your convenience. It's fun. It's fun and a little bit strange sometimes, because my students quite often listen to the show. And so not that I forget what I talk about each week, but it always catches me a little off guard, because I'll say something in class and a student will raise their hand and say, but in your show a few weeks ago, you said something else. And I think, oh my goodness, I need to keep track of what I'm doing every week so that I can counter it or stay consistent with my students. So last week, as I said, we talked about positive psychology, and Martin Seligman, who's kind of the founding father of the modern positive psychology movement, came up with the well-being theory. And the well-being theory is described by the acronym PERMA, P-E-R-M-A. So the first one, P, is positive emotions. And that goes along with the idea of having good thoughts, having compassion for yourself, trying to, sustain positive communication, just positive emotions, trying to have more positive emotions than negative in our life. E is engagement. And engagement is being involved in an activity that you thoroughly get absorbed in, that you get so lost in this activity or this hobby that you forget time and space, and you're just really engrossed in it. You don't even think about how you're feeling or how your life is going, because you're just in the moment enjoying this activity. And a lot of people call it getting into the flow. The R is relationships. And he said, one of the reasons that he broke away from the idea of happiness as being the foundation of positive psychology was because relationships aren't necessarily always the driver of happiness. That a lot of times in our relationships, we're doing what is right for that relationship. We're caring for people in sickness and in struggles. Sometimes the relationship is struggling and you're just kind of getting by day to day. That a lot of our commitment to each other in relationships is not always going to be sustained by a sense of happiness, but in some ways it's a sense of duty and commitment and being the right thing to do. M, it relies on our meaning and purpose, and that's finding work or being a part of something that's bigger than us, that we devote ourselves to, that also helps to stabilize our well-being. And then the final part of PERMA, A, is accomplishments, achievements and accomplishments. And that's the importance of having goals and ambitions in life that help us achieve things and feel accomplished and grow our self-esteem and grow our pride and our sense of fulfillment. And overall, Seligman says, that the goal of positive psychology, the goal of the well-being theory, is for us to have a life where we thrive and we flourish. Doesn't say anything about happiness, but that we thrive and we flourish. And not just ourselves, but we also live a life where we help the world and our community and our families to thrive and to flourish. So after I got home and I was thinking about the show and I was talking to my husband about it and I was thinking about this idea of PERMA and this idea of well-being, that it really struck me that a lot of people, will probably focus on positive emotion, because that's an easy one. I'll think good thoughts. I'll do things that make me happy. I'll get a massage. I'll, hang out with people that I enjoy. Like that positive emotion thing is a real doable goal to achieve or a doable task in maintaining mental health. And I think that, you know, people quite often know to focus on something that gives them meaning and purpose, that we look for work or volunteering or, you know, something that we believe in that's bigger than us that we can get behind. And so I think people do well when they're trying to boost their sense of well-being by following the meaning and purpose. I think that people start to struggle when it comes to relationships. That a lot of the story we're told about relationships is that we're supposed to find someone that makes us happy. And that has nothing to do with marriage and relationships, that it's more of a way that we support and partner and make commitments to another person. So I think that we struggle a lot of times with our relationships because we're not really sure of how to be in them and be in them well and to move through them when they're tough. I think when it comes to our mental health and well-being, we struggle with the idea of engagement, finding the time to actually be a part of some sort of hobby or activity that we can lose ourselves in. I mean, how many of us actually have an endless amount of time to devote to an activity? I think that is one of the problems with our modern society is that we don't really have the time or build in the time to get lost in something that takes us out of our day-to-day. So I think a lot of us struggle with the engagement piece or the flow piece of mental health. And then ultimately, I think we struggle with the sense of accomplishment and achievement and the setting of goals and reaching those goals and being proud of that and sharing that. And I worry sometimes that the pendulum is going to swing from where we are now, which is too much stress and pressure on our children to achieve and accomplish and, you know, be the top and the best of everything. That's too much. But my fear is that we're going to swing the other direction and have no expectations for our children and no guidance and no encouragement to setting goals. And then we're going to take away one of the legs of their sense of well-being and an ability to maintain their mental health. 805-781-3875. So let's share some of our accomplishments, those things that give us pride and a sense of, and even maybe a sense of purpose, or things that give us a sense of flow. How are you filling in those other three parts of the well-being model of PERMA? Hi, Lindsay, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi, I'm grateful for this opportunity. I would just like to share that I have been clean and sober for 1,336 days today.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
I need to have a bell or something or an applause thing I can play. Lindsay, congratulations.
Thank you so much.
I can hear the pride in your voice. Wonderful. Yeah, I can hear it.
I've heard that more than once, and it is it's no coincidence.
And how does it feel to say it out loud, to own it?
It's something that I never, ever thought I would be able to do. The thought of I'm not kidding when I say that it was the idea of living without drugs or alcohol was literally thinking about living without breathing. It was my normal, and to be able to go one day at a time, getting through and living as a normal human being, and just being sometimes comfortable, a lot of times uncomfortable in my own skin, and making it through one day at a time is absolutely absolutely a blessing, and makes me so grateful to be here.
And how long were you using before you were able to start your 1,000 days?
I was heavy drug use. My story goes back a lot farther than I realized. But the main portion of my use is about 5 years.
Wow, that is a big change in your life, isn't it?
It is. It's literally learning how to live.
Yeah.
Again. Mm-hmm.
It's like you go to sleep at that point in your life, right? And you wake up 5 years later and you think, oh my goodness, where have I been?
Where did it all go?
Yeah, yeah. Where have I been?
And I'll be 36 this month. And sometimes it feels like my learning curve is so different. I feel like I'm an 18-year-old sometimes. Things that I should have learned, or I think I should have learned then, I'm just learning now.
Well, and of course, the adage, better late than never, right? Until the day we die,
exactly.
We get to learn.
That's so true.
We never stop having the opportunity to be a better human every day.
No, and that's actually the prayer that I say every morning is just please help me to do better today than I did yesterday.
And so along with this accomplishment, Lindsay, now of you know, being sober for over 1,000 days, and I had talked about, you know, once we reach kind of this a pinnacle or a place, that we start looking around, or we have this need to kind of look for another goal or something to work for. Is there something on the horizon, mm-hmm. something new for you that you're working towards?
Yeah, actually, there have been a few things. I thought my recovery would go a lot faster, and it is not, it's definitely not at my pace, but I'm glad for that. I was lucky enough to complete my bachelor's degree before before I started heavily using, and so and I also was had the I guess opportunity to spend time in some substantial time in county jail, and through that and through being completely humbled at some of the things that I've been blessed with and the things that I took for granted, I'm looking at law school and doing something in order to, because I do have the credentials and I have the experience to be able to not only legitimately help people who have no resources, no money, nothing, no one fighting for them, and to be able to say, I know what you're feeling, and to be able to have that empathy, and to be able to do something then to help that person is something that I feel obligated, a duty to do.
Wow. I feel humbled hearing your story.
Thank you. I just want everybody to know how happy it's possible, and I'm truly blessed to be here today.
Well, and I really appreciate you taking the time to call in and tell your story, because it's the inspiration piece that's so important, that there's a lot of people listening right now who are feeling stuck or overwhelmed, mm-hmm. or have given up, and they hear you talking and the energy in your voice and the, you know, the sense of do-over and the future ahead of you, and they're feeling a little more hopeful because you took the time to call in and talk about your accomplishment.
I appreciate those words so much. Thank you so much.
Hang in there, Lindsay, and I hope you report in again next year or anytime you want to. I'm not going to ban you from the phone, but I hope you'll let us know how you're doing as you continue on your journey for your next accomplishment.
I will. Thank you so much for that invitation.
Congratulations, Lindsay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I get so excited, Bree, that I want to jump through the microphone so I can hug her, you know?
Oh, yeah, that was wonderful.
Yeah, so that's a great way to kick things off. And the phone lines are open. You know, I talking about these things that we were proud of, you could hear it in Lindsay's voice, that as she got to say it out loud, it felt bigger and more real to her. And I think we hesitate to talk about and share the things we're proud of because, again, we're very anti-brag in this culture, right? It's very much a faux pas. We're not supposed to talk about things. But bragging, I always relate to things that are more material, right? That, you know, that it's like a one-upmanship when you're trying to brag about maybe being better than someone else, you know, that you have somehow are superior because you've done something or bought something or, you know, found something or you look like something. That bragging, I understand, is annoying. And also my kids talk about, and I never really heard the term about humble brag. Are you familiar with that term?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I mean, it's always been around, but I never knew there was a name for it. But this humble bragging of kind of bragging about something, but it's in a veil of kind of self-deprecation, where it's like, you know, it's so annoying that when I dress down, people still try to hit on me, right? that trying to, or it's really hard when I go out with my kids because people are always stopping and saying how beautiful they are, and it's hard to get my grocery shopping done. Mm-hmm. Am I on the humble brag path?
I mean, like, I think probably the most classic example might be like bragging about charitable donations of some sort, I guess.
But then even having the money to make such a huge charitable donation.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of an oxymoron, I guess.
Yeah. So we have, you know, we've tried out the humble brag, but it's interesting. I was reading a research study about bragging before I came to do the show because I wanted to kind of differentiate between sharing the accomplishments and talking about our achievements and just kind of bragging about something. Mm-hmm. And they did an actual study where they showed people or had people listen to comments that were just brags, and then some were humble brags, and then some were just kind of statements. And the people rated whether they liked the person or attracted the person based on these statements. And the humble brag person always lost, that they were never considered attractive or someone anyone would want to spend time with. But the bragging person was more tenable. But if we can put aside this idea that every time we want to share something we're proud about, it's bragging, and really focus on how inspirational it is to other people to hear about accomplishments or achievements that someone has earned through hard work. You know, maybe that's the other thing, that bragging quite often has a lot to do with things that we've achieved or accomplished that took no effort, right? We just bought them. But accomplishments and achievements that go along with sustaining our mental health and well-being are those things that we set a goal for, that we had to struggle to get to, that we might have failed along the way, that we had to kind of drag ourselves through the dark valley, and then we finally get there. And then that's something worth crowing about. I love that term. Something that we want to toot our horn about and say it out loud and make it real in our lives, make it something that is part of who we are. And again, if you understand or kind of buy into this idea of the theory of well-being, that your mental health actually depends on you setting these goals and acknowledging your achievements and continuing to set new goals and moving towards things you want to accomplish. Then it's a little counter, right, to kind of the message we've had for the last 15, 20 years in our culture, that it's all about feeling good, that there's too much pressure, that I don't want to work that hard, that we don't want to just be focused on our achievements and, you know, goal. We have a lot of concern for our children, as I mentioned. But I wonder if that's one of the reasons why the levels of depression go up for people when they retire. Because there's the idea that I'm going to retire, I no longer am going to work, I'm kind of over with the productivity of my life, the productive times of my life. Then it's just kind of about hobbies and hanging out and grandchildren. But if Seligman's research is correct, that we continue to need to have things that get us out of bed, goals and accomplishments. And a lot of people will say, you know, well, I do a lot of volunteer work and I have, you know, my kids that bring meaning to my life, or, you know, I have a spirituality. But I think that meaning and purpose, even though we might fulfill that through different venues, either through meaningful work or through volunteering, that's still different than accomplishments, you know, setting a goal for something. And if you recall, you know, one of my favorite guests of all time was Lois Bristow. And Lois went back and got her PhD when she was 80 years old. 80 years old. She's 86 now. And if you remember, we had her on the show a couple of times talking about the book that she wrote. And she's always kind of setting these new goals and places to achieve. And I can see that, you know, her health is good, her spirit is strong, her eyes are clear. And I think that she is someone who lives in that state of perma, that state of well-being. So how is it for you? This is your moment to shine. You get to call in and share an accomplishment, to share an achievement. And it's interesting because I think it's harder for women to do this. It's harder for women to really talk about those things they do well or something they're proud of or something they've achieved, because in women's culture and girl culture, it's brutal to try to even feel good about yourself, let alone say that you feel good about yourself. But if anyone in the girl circle notices that one person or one woman or one girl is feeling better about herself than someone else, we have a toxic tendency to tear those women down or to tear those girls down and say, who does she think she is? She thinks she's all that. Why does she think she's so special? And we hear that enough growing up in the world as women. And so we start to push down and dampen those things that actually are positive about us. And if you have a conversation with a woman, especially a younger woman, she'll find it much easier to talk about her flaws or the ways that she doesn't measure up or the things that she struggles with. Those conversations, those things tend to flow pretty easily. And it's much harder for women to really talk about and touch on those things that they're proud of. I mean, what happens when you look in the mirror? Do you notice the flaws, the things that you know, would like to improve or aren't happy with? Or do you recognize and focus on those things that you like about yourself? And not to make too general of a sweeping statement, but I am going to make a sweeping statement, that I notice that men quite often don't have that same critical eye when they look in the mirror or they think about themselves. I think, you know, people have doubts or concerns, but I don't know if men suffer with it to the extent that a lot of women do. This cultural pressure to dampen down those things that we feel good about. So this is your time. You can call in and share it, and we will all revel in your success. And again, as I was saying to Lindsay, I think it's important for other people to hear inspirational stories, because we all go through periods of time where we struggle. We all go through periods of time where we wonder what it's all about or if we're going to be able to make it another day. And to hear a story, a triumph of someone else, gives us hope that we can set a goal and move forward and do something different. You know, what about the retirees? I know I've talked to some of you on the air about kind of feeling lost and not really sure what you're going to do next and wondering, you know, why it doesn't, you don't feel as good as you'd hoped you would at this time in your life. The depression is really common. 805-781-3875. The phone lines are open to take your calls. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I am Elizabeth Barrett. One of the things about sharing accomplishments, if you're thinking about how do I word that when I call in, how do I share that story, great ways of sharing accomplishments where you don't feel like you're bragging is to say, I learned this when I was going through this period of time in my life. So when you start off with something you learned, or to talk about, you know, I had to really overcome, or I had to really push myself, it's kind of the way that we introduce these accomplishments, these achievements that help us to tell their story. And again, for young women or women in general, I really encourage you to think about and share something that you're proud of, or something that you're working towards, or something that you've achieved. Because I think the first step towards really gaining a sense of well-being is to take the time to notice and share and talk about something that you're proud of. And maybe I'm wrong. I mean, maybe men really struggle with it too. I don't know. I mean, I'm thinking mostly of the men in my family and the men in my life, but I don't clearly know if this is something that's common for them or common for more men. Or maybe I live in a household of men who are really proud of themselves every day. You know, we become, when we bury these things that are special about us, we become really adept at burying our strengths and our achievements. And what happens is it becomes more and more difficult to motivate ourselves to take on other challenges. That there's this disconnect we go through, that when we bury those things that we're proud of, when we kind of ignore them or we diminish them or dismiss them as being, well, that wasn't that big of a deal, or I don't know, that wasn't so important, we start to disconnect from our sense of who we are, just in the way that we can start to disconnect from our body, and that we can start to feel kind of like we're floating and anchorless. And then that's how we can find ourselves in this kind of trap of wavering mental health, when we don't have all of our legs of PERMA in line. So this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, 805-781-3875.
Tell me that you love me, yeah. Tell me something good. Tell me that you like it, yeah. Got no time is what you're known to say. Day.
You're listening to Public Radio, KCBX. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Our number is 805-781-3875. And we're talking about positive psychology and the theory of well-being and this idea of PERMA, the acronym PERMA. And as I was thinking about this after the show last week, because I introduced it last week, that when we are going through periods of depression or anxiety or self-doubt or sadness or stress or kind of those blue periods between things that we enjoy doing, I think that we don't pay attention to all the pieces of our psyche that need to be tended, all of the ways that we can support our mental health and well-being. We tend to focus on kind of those obvious ones. Well, when I'm feeling down or depressed or anxious, I'll exercise more. I'll try to eat better. I'll, you know, watch a funny show. I'll think good thoughts. I'll do things that make me happy. You know, I'll get a massage. You know, we land on those things, and they're kind of temporary fixes. They're a piece to well-being, but they're more of a temporary, you know, buoying of the psyche. But there are other pieces to it, of the PERMA, like engagement, like our relationships, and like achievement. Those are really the ones that take effort and work to build and to really make a part of our lives. But those three pieces of the well-being are the ones that are going to sustain us when things get really difficult, when we're really struggling, when we're going through really tough times in our life. And so that's why I brought this up today, is to talk about, you know, do you have time in your life for something to really be engaged in? And how are your relationships? Are you feeding the relationships that are going to ultimately feed and support you? And what about those accomplishments and your goals? And are you setting goals for yourself ongoing? You know, when was the last time you achieved something? Was it when you were 16 or 21 or 30? I mean, has it been more than a decade since you set a goal for yourself? Then you might be in a rut. 805-781-3875. Hi, Annette, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, I like your topic today. I've been thinking about this lately. So for you to mention it that way is like, it's not a brag, but it is an accomplishment. And I do feel accomplished with 20 years of marriage. Mm-hmm. And we've raised four kids. The youngest are going to be 17 in December. So, and it hasn't always been easy. And we deliberately stayed married. We could have walked away. We could have let things really fester and be really unhealthy, but we pushed through, and we're really glad that we did.
And what was it that was made it so you were able to push through? Was it, you know, a commitment on both of your part? What did you do to kind of get through that tough times, or the tough times?
Yeah, well, it was definitely a commitment. We're both committed Christians, so we started our marriage with the thought of commitment and the commitment to staying married no matter what. And then what that means and how it unfolded was, you know, took 20 years and it's still unfolding, but just, you know, a lot of forgiveness, mm-hmm. a lot of forgiveness.
And I would imagine too, an incredible amount of pride, because you have created a family that's been longstanding, and I imagine your children are doing well. I mean, how does that pride, do you allow yourself to feel pride?
Well, I don't know if I would call it pride. I think I would call it, the feeling is more of, I feel rich. It's not something that I can, because I didn't do it on my own, so I don't feel like I can have the pride, because I relied on God to help, you know, to be the strength. So, mm-hmm. But one of the main reasons I did it was, or we did it together, and I keep saying I because I did a lot of work and he's done a lot of work, but was that my parents were divorced when I was 11. And it really fragmented our family for the rest of our lives, and we're still feeling the effects of that decision that my parents made. So I think that for me, I kept that goal in mind, which was to become a grandparent with my husband. Mm. and to be able to see the not the end result, but to be able to see the next part of our lives together, because we've worked so hard, you know, throughout these 20 years to keep it together, to make sure our kids are happy and healthy, or at least healthy and working on something, you know.
Well, I wonder if we do really ever look at marriage for what it is, which is an achievement and an accomplishment, because when we look at the definition of an achievement, it requires, you know, pushing ourselves beyond our comfort and going to places we never thought we could get to, and then being able to look back and say, wow, you know, this was something that we accomplished.
Yeah, I definitely feel it's an accomplishment. Well, I definitely feel that.
Congratulations. And now you're a role model, and to throw a little systems therapy out to you, Annette, that you've now broken that pattern of divorce for your own children, which is huge, because divorce tends to beget divorce. It becomes kind of a generational pass down. But you and your husband are modeling something different, which will change the future for your kids.
And that's exactly what I was trying to do. And it's my second marriage. So, you know, I already knew what divorce looked like before I married the second time. I knew what it looked like for myself, and also what it looked like for the rest of my family when I was younger. So,
well, congratulations.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say congratulations. I want to honor your accomplishment.
Thank you. And if there's anybody out there, you know, that I don't know, that is thinking about giving up, it's there's so much to marriage than just saying your vows and having children. And, you know, that it's very, very rewarding when you get past, unless there's, like, you know, really bad abuse or something going on, but you can push past things and you can get to other levels with your spouse that you never even knew was there. So.
Well said. Thank you, Annette. Thank you for taking the time to call in. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and we're talking about accomplishments and achievements. And it's one of the primary legs of the theory of well-being, which is at the heart of our mental health. If we want to sustain our mental health, you know, we need to work on those things that give us a stronger sense of rootedness, of foundation, like relationships and the work that goes into them, and the sense of engagement, having activities we do like surfing or reading or gardening or these things we do where we just get lost in the activity. And wondering, you know, do you have time to really lose yourself in any sort of activity that fully engage you? And then the other piece is about achievement and whether or not we're shying away from the importance of achieving things and reaching our goals. 805-781-3875. So you're a recent college graduate, Bree, you know, and here you are when your first job out of college. Did you have this sense of dip at any point where you'd kind of gotten to where you'd been working to get to? And
well, yeah, I mean, growing up, I kind of expected to not have a job right out of college because a lot of my formative years were in the economic recession, and my parents lost their business when that happened. And I just kind of assumed I would get out of college and I would really be struggling for a while. And it was a very nice surprise to get this job down here in San Luis Obispo, and I'm so happy to be in it. I definitely expected a lot more struggle, I guess. Mm-hmm. A lot of my friends are going through that. I double majored in theater and journalism in college, and those two subjects are consistently majors that are on like top 10 lists of like top 10 majors, job lists that you won't get a job out of in college. And so I just assumed I was going to be struggling and kind of having to invent my own ways of being successful. And I just got an amazing opportunity that I happened to be very qualified for with all the skills that I had. And I mean, I blew kind of my own expectations. I blew my parents' expectations. A lot of people who meet me down here kind of assume I'm a student. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of been interesting for me. I wasn't a student that long ago, so I'm not really super surprised, but at the same time, I'm a person who has a job in her field, and I'm not to bag on interns, but I'm not an intern. I'm a person with a job too. I'm just young.
So what happens next then, you know, to maintain that kind of forward momentum or that next achievement, that next goal? Have you set that yet? Or are you still reveling?
Yeah, I have. I mean, that's definitely something that's been on my mind for a really long time. Cause I've set it, I achieved a goal that's something I thought about for almost my entire life. And now I want to try to create my own show at some point, you know, and try to get my work on to the NPR network and also try my hand at other kinds of writing too. I've dabbled in improv comedy and sketch comedy in college, and that's something I definitely want to continue. But since I've moved here to California, it's been difficult to kind of for me to find that community. But I haven't tried that hard. So as long as I just continue to have a goal in mind, I like to write out my list of goals. They usually change every year.
But it's nice because you set them and you keep moving forward.
Right, yeah.
It's interesting because when we talk about achievement and being able to say it out loud, and I'm watching you tell the story of how you got to where you are and going through school and kind of surprising yourself, and I can see your face light up and you sat up a little straighter in the chair. And, you know, the way that we get to share and talk about our achievements really do, you can physically see someone grow and feel better and build that sense of well-being when they get to talk about something they're proud of. So this is your opportunity. And it's funny because I told you at the beginning, before we went on the air, I said, I'm feeling way too relaxed today because I'm assuming that this is something a lot of people will be excited to do, is to call in and share something they're proud of. And I knew that that was a warning sign at the beginning of the show that I was way too relaxed, because the other part I was concerned of is that we're really phobic about talking about things that we're proud of, because it sounds like we're bragging or humble bragging, or it sounds like, you know, we're going to jinx ourselves if we talk about it, or that it's not polite. But it's really important. It's important to acknowledge and say out loud those things we're proud of. 805-781-3875. Hi, Bill, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
That's me again. I've been on your show a bunch of times, but I think that this is a good opportunity to talk about what you're talking about from the disabled person's point of view. And one of the things I wanted to ask you about was, what happens when people have accomplishments and nobody hears about it? And what I'm referring to right now is the Paralympics. I mean, hundreds of people competed in a world-class competition, and I never heard about it on NPR, never read about it in the paper, it wasn't on the news, you know, and these people put their hearts out, you know, accomplishing something, and they didn't get recognized for it. What's that mean?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's disappointing. You and I had talked about it briefly once before about, you know, how something right on top of the Olympics could go unnoticed. And I saw stories here and there, but not really anything in the newspaper. And, you know, it depends on how do we value people's accomplishments. Are some things newsworthy and some things not newsworthy? I mean, I think it does say a lot about how our culture kind of prioritizes success. And maybe that's why people don't talk about a lot of things they're proud of, because we take in this cultural message that our life isn't worth, you know, sharing achievements about, or our world isn't that interesting to other people, because the culture only highlights the accomplishments of celebrities or high paid athletes, that we don't really celebrate the accomplishments of everyday people. So we, as everyday people, tend to diminish or dismiss the things that are important to us.
Yeah. And, I'm not going to brag about myself, but I know a lot of people who use wheelchairs and have done some pretty amazing things. And they probably won't call you today, but they do have good stories to tell.
Well, and it's funny because you just said, well, I'm not going to brag about myself, but I'm sure there's something you'd accomplished in your life that you'd like to share, that's something you're proud of.
Sure. I've raised a couple of kids and rebuilt a barn that burned down, and I do metal sculpture. And, you know, I keep a pretty busy life, and I'm creative, and not very many people want to ask about those things. Most of them assume that your life is miserable, and you know, and they don't want to ask about it because they're afraid you might tell them how miserable you are.
Yeah, so maybe that's part of the work that we have to do in our own lives is to share our stories so that people will connect with us. Because what I said earlier in the show is that we fear that if we talk about something we're proud of, like finishing a college degree or getting a dream job that we always hoped to have, or you know, reaching a fitness level that we worked really hard to get to, or learning a language that we always wanted to you know, to be able to speak. If we talk about those things, that's not really bragging. That's kind of inspirational to other people. When we talk about our stories, other people get excited and think, I guess I can do that too. I talk about Lois getting her PhD at 80 because I want other people who are retired or who are older who feel like that time of achievement for them has passed and now they're just riding it out, you know, into the sunset, to feel inspired that there's always time to accomplish and do new things. And if you really believe what I'm saying to you, that our mental health, our well-being is rooted in those five parts of the theory of well-being, and that it's not enough to just take care of a few of them, you know, our positive communications or even engagement or our relationships or meaning. We have to engage in all five parts of that PERMA model in order to sustain good mental health. And the older we get, sometimes the more challenging it is to sustain that good mental health. Nicholas, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hello.
Hi.
Thank you for having me. I just quit my job last month. I've been working as an accountant for the past 6 years, and I'm now pursuing a career in organic farming.
Congratulations. How does it feel?
The first day of work was very, very difficult, but I'm enjoying every day, and it's been great.
And so how long did it take you to make that leap? How long did you stew on that decision?
5 years.
Wow.
A part of the reason was that I had to raise enough capital to invest in myself. So that was one of the difficulties that I had to overcome, was saving money every year and not going out.
And then, of course, as a good accountant, you did prioritize the things that would sustain you, right, so that you could succeed once you quit your job. You weren't just going to quit and then wander off into the world, that you actually made a plan and made took the steps to get there.
That's correct. And I'm actually taking a additional coursework in farming through Salinas County, through the Hartnell system.
And will we see your goods at the local farmers market then at some time soon?
Possibly. I'm probably going to be selling through a third-party distributor, so you might actually see my product in stores.
Can you say what it is?
I've been helping out with zucchini and kale currently.
Fabulous. Nicholas, I'm happy for you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for taking the time to call in. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. Jackie, you're on the air. What's in your mind?
Hi, Elizabeth. I just wanted to add that so many people place a value judgment on people's accomplishments based on how much money they earn from it, and instead of appreciating it for its intrinsic worth. Mm-hmm. I know about this because of poetry. You know, many times, even from my own parents, they've made statements that I have to roll my eyes at. Like, you know, they'll say, well, how much money are you going to make off of that book? Mm-hmm. And it's almost like, oh, it doesn't have any value unless you make money from it.
Right. So that would take the fun out of sharing that sense of accomplishment or joy if you are going to get that bad or negative or difficult feedback, right? So that would cause us to hold things in and not share, because you don't want to hear from other people their negativity when it comes to something you're proud of.
Right. And also, you know, just thinking that, well, something is only valued in our society because we're, you know, our society sort of built on this idea that if you've made a lot of money off of it, whoopee, you've really succeeded. You've accomplished something. Mm-hmm. But if you've accomplished something and it's not something that rolls in the money, then suddenly it doesn't have any value. So
right.
I just thought I'd you can pick up the ball from there, Elizabeth.
No, Jackie, thank you. I think that's a really good point, that when I brought up the subject of achievement or accomplishment, in my head I was thinking things like learning a language you always wanted to know, or, you know, reading the great works, or hiking, you know, some trail. In my head, I wasn't going to really any sort of financial success, but you make a really good point that people probably don't feel like they've really achieved something unless it did bring in more money, or something that, you know, other people might be impressed to hear that you've started a business and it was really successful. But I think when we talk about mental health and well-being, it's the more subtle personal achievements. You know, I don't think Lois got her PhD because she thought she was going to hit the tenure track at a university. She did it because she really wanted to feel this sense of accomplishment in herself. And that's what we're talking about when we talk about sustaining mental health and well-being. Another Jackie, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Thanks for taking my... I was just going to share something I feel proud of, which is that I had my first child last year, and it's almost been a year, and it fills me with pride that I was able to, you know, have a child, and giving birth was the greatest accomplishment of my life so far. So,
was it something that you were surprised you were able to do? Did it surprise you?
It completely surprised me, and it also made me feel proud to be a woman, and made me feel like I share something with, you know, I'm not the first person who's done it, and so it made me feel proud to be a woman and be a part of kind of the sisterhood of women.
Well, and I think it's an important thing to share also, because this is another area where our culture has you know, made the whole prospect of having children terrifying for a lot of young women. It seems to be a medical emergency, or you hear horror stories, or it's going to be so difficult, or like we tend to, even in our culture of womanhood, tell each other horror stories about childbirth. And so I think it's great to tell stories of pride and accomplishment, and that it actually was a wonderful experience. We don't hear that story enough.
Well, for me, it was absolutely wonderful and one of the greatest feelings of my life. So I just had to share it.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
I'm tooting my horn for you. Congratulations. And I hope you continue to enjoy motherhood, because it is an accomplishment unto itself. And so I want to leave you with this idea of positive psychology, and that it's easy for us to get wrapped up in the flaws of our lives, the challenges in our lives. You know, a lot of therapy and a lot of psychology tends to focus on the ways that we struggle, when really what we should be focusing on are the things that we're doing well, the areas of our life that are actually going okay. And if we put our attention and energy into those areas, we're going to find that we thrive and flourish much more than continuously beating ourselves up in the ways that we're not quite making it where we should be, or living up to our expectations. Just try it for a week. Focus every time you look in that mirror, or each day, on something that you do feel proud of, something that you are accomplishing, setting a goal for yourself and meeting it, and see how that changes your psyche. And I encourage you to look at these five stages of PERMA and really pay attention to meeting them all. Because when we talk about mental health, it's not enough just to throw some exercise and nutrition and good sleep at it. It takes some more sustaining things to really maintain good health. This has been a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can find our show at kcbx.org. On iTunes, you can podcast previous shows, and you can find me on our Facebook page. And you can always send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. I appreciate you being part of our conversation, and I look forward to coming back next week to sharing our stories. Thank you for supporting Public Radio, KCBX. You refuse to put
brother that you love me, yeah.
Tell me something good.
Tell me that you like it, yeah.
To say.